no
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Victor Jory in Lincoln and the Baltimore Plot on the Hallmark Playhouse. Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we tell of an incident in the life of the great president whose anniversary we celebrate on Sunday. In the lives of almost all great men, there are tense moments of drama, but not all these get into the school history books. Our story tonight is one of these dramas in the life of Abraham Lincoln. It is based on papers and documents at present in the Huntington Library at San Marino, California, where they were used by Miss Norma B. Cuthbert to prepare her monograph entitled Lincoln and the Baltimore Plot. I think you'll agree that in this case, a work of scholarship produced a very exciting result. Now for a matter that's of special importance whenever a Lincoln story is dramatized. The part of Lincoln, with its many-sided brilliance and above all its nobility of character, has always fascinated actors. And tonight we are proud to have in this role a distinguished visitor from the New York stage, Mr. Victor Jory. And now a word about Hallmark cards from Frank Goss before we begin the first act of Lincoln and the Baltimore Plot.
We celebrate a day of thoughtfulness and sentiment next week, St. Valentine's Day. And you can find Hallmark Valentines to send as proudly as you send Hallmark cards on every memorable occasion. On the back of each Valentine, you will see the Hallmark that is your assurance of perfect taste. That Hallmark is a symbol which all who receive your Valentines will quickly recognize, and they will know you cared enough to send the very best. Now, Hallmark Playhouse, presenting Lincoln and the Baltimore Plot, starring Victor Jory.
President Lincoln was newly elected, and he and his family were on their way to Washington for his inauguration. His journey was arranged to take him through 5 states. Like all of the presidents, he had a lot of friends, and he had more than his share of enemies. His train stopped for a night in Indianapolis, and he rode in a carriage with his wife and his friend, Ward Hill Lamon, through the crowded streets.
Seen too many people on the street.
A president doesn't pass by often. It's something to tell your children. I saw the president on the way to his inauguration.
Well, I hope our sons are behaving themselves. I told Willie and Tad to stay seated and not to jump up and down and upset the driver.
They'll be all right. It's funny, isn't it, how alike all the faces are. I've seen these same faces every place we've stopped. The faces of the ones that liked me and the faces of the ones that hated me. And the faces of the ones who believe I'll ruin the country and the ones that hope I might do something for it.
Oh, they'll all mighty soon see.
I wish I could say to them, give me a chance. Just give me a chance. I was born of country, earth, and open sky. I grew listening to the dreams of free men. If you'll just give me a chance, I'll put my hand to making some of those dreams come true. I don't want to take anything from the country. I just want a chance to give.
Well, if that's what you want to say, why don't you say it?
You can't say those things. All you can do is stand up before them and state your views and hope that they'll sense how you feel and give you a chance to live and...
To live? Well, you talk as though you expected them to try to kill you.
Nonsense. Well, there's the Bates Hotel up ahead, unless I'm very much mistaken.
That's it, all right.
We're stopping.
Let me get out of the carriage first.
No, I'll get out first.
Listen to them.
They love him.
Oh, any one of them could have a gun.
Yes, any of them have.
Oh, I'll be glad when we get him back on that train.
Son.
What are you doing down here all by yourself?
Oh, just thinking.
Well, this is no way for a president to spend his birthday.
Even a president likes to get off to himself for a little quiet thinking once in a while. You know, I'm 52 years old today.
I had an idea that you were. You've been bragging about it all day.
Mm. You know, many, many years ago, there was a girl in Illinois, and she used to say to me, Abe, someday you'll be president.
Mother?
No, I didn't know your mother then. That was when I was young. Perhaps it was the last time I was young.
Where's the girl now?
Asleep. Out there.
Oh.
Days like this, we used to tramp across the fields, talking. Talking. Seems like we never stopped talking. Strange, I can't remember any of the things she said those days. But I can remember exactly how her voice sounded. The heart remembers longer than the mind. Words can be forgotten by the mind, but the heart hears the melody of a voice eternally. Well, I'd better get back to work. Your mother sent me after Tad and Willie. I forgot about it completely.
I forgot, too. She sent me to look for Tad, Willie, and you.
Father?
Oh, hello, son.
Mother sent me to hunt for you and Bob and Willie.
Well, Willie's the only one that's lost now.
Willie isn't lost. He's up driving the train.
No.
Yes. He's got influence with the engineer.
Come on. Let's get him quick before your mother finds out.
Would any of you happen to have seen the President of the United States or his three sons?
We're going to collect Willie now, dear. He's up front talking politics.
Oh, at 10 years, he must talk a brilliant game of politics.
He talks a better game than some of these politicians talk. What's that newspaper in your hand, dear?
Oh, I was just reading the accounts of our reception in New York.
Oh, I see.
I have been sent in charge of the president's wife, and the president's son.
Hello, Hill. Who sent you?
Willie.
Willie?
Yes. He says you've all disappeared, and he's hunting for you. You'd better put in an appearance before he pulls the emergency cord and stops the train. And let me tell you, he can stop the train anytime he wants. He has influence with the engineer.
How did Willie get so much influence with the engineer?
The engineer wants to retire and be a postmaster.
Oh, I see.
And Willie has told him that he has a certain amount of influence with the incoming president of the United States.
Oh, you're going to have to spank that boy.
Why? He's telling the truth. He does have influence. Say, aren't we due in Philadelphia at 4:00?
My goodness, is it that late?
Well, it's almost 4:00.
Well, all right, boys. Come with me and help get our things together.
Well, I wonder how Philadelphia is going to receive us. The strange thing being president, you never know whether it's a foe or a friend you're stepping off the train to meet. You never know. Oh, my dear, I've shaken so many hands tonight that my arm feels like it's going to drop off.
Well, we really should go back into the reception room.
Well, even the President of the United States is entitled to a few minutes to get a breath of fresh air.
Oh, here you are, Mr. President.
Hello, Hill.
Mr. President, I'm afraid I'll have to take you away from the reception for a few minutes.
Oh.
There's someone who has a message of great importance for you.
Oh, who is it?
It's Mr. Alan Pinkerton.
The detective?
Yes.
What does he want with the President?
Oh, it's purely a routine matter, Mrs. Pinkerton.
You go in and entertain the guests, dear. I'll only be a few minutes. Pinkerton's a fine detective.
He's in the next room.
President, this is an honor.
How do you do, Mr. Pinkerton? Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Mr. Lincoln, as you may know, I've been in the employ of the Philadelphia, Wilmington, and Baltimore Railroad to guard the line.
Yes, I know, Mr. Pinkerton.
Recently, from some of my employees, I've had word of a concrete and definite plot to assassinate you on your way through Baltimore the day after tomorrow.
Oh? And who is it that's going to assassinate me?
The ringleader is a barber named Fernandino.
I never heard of him.
Neither have I.
He's the head of several treasonable secret military societies in Baltimore.
Hmm.
This plot, Mr. President, according to the conspirators themselves, even includes some of your Baltimore police escort.
Mr. Pinkerton became a member of the group for a time in order to find out what their plans were.
Fernandino says he'll immortalize himself by plunging a knife into your heart.
And is that the chief threat against my life, the half-crazed threat of a foreigner?
Don't underestimate this foreigner, Mr. President. He heads a large group. They've worked out their plot in the greatest detail. I've had several men on the case, and their reports all coincide with mine.
I see. Well, how are they going to accomplish this, this deed that they have resolved on?
There'll be only a small police force at the railroad depot in Baltimore. A fight will start to draw off the policemen at the moment of your arrival. Then the assassins will close around you and the deed will be accomplished.
Well, Mr. Pinkerton, accepting your statements at their face value, what do you propose to do about this?
I would like to take you to Washington tonight, secretly.
I can't do that, Mr. Pinkerton. Tomorrow morning, I'm scheduled to raise the flag over Independence Hall, and then I must visit the legislature at Harrisburg. I'm not going to run away in the night like a frightened schoolboy. I'll be the laughingstock of the country.
As the President of the United States, it seems to me you owe it to the country to take whatever precautions seem necessary for the preservation of your person.
Even at the risk of appearing a coward?
At any risk whatsoever. So I shall remain in Philadelphia, and perhaps, after your engagements tomorrow, you will reconsider.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pinkerton, but I doubt it. Now, come in and join the guests. Mr. Lamont will show you about, won't you, Hill?
It will be a pleasure.
If you'll excuse me, I'm going up to my room. I suddenly find myself a little tired.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Who are you?
I'm Fred Seward, Mr. President. Your son, Bob, brought me up to your bedroom. He said it was the best place to talk to you confidentially.
Oh, I see.
My father sent me from Washington with some letters, which he said were of such importance that he would trust them to no one else. He said he would have come himself, but with the war situation looking more and more grave every day, he didn't feel that anyone could leave the Senate.
I understand. You are aware of the contents of these letters?
Yes, Mr. President.
Your father writes that a New York detective has reported that there is serious danger to me in Baltimore. A Chicago detective named Pinkerton told me the same thing about an assassination plot.
My father asked me to urge you not to go to Baltimore.
Well, I don't see how I can change my plans now. I must go through Baltimore. I must go through Baltimore.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Lincoln and the Baltimore Plot, starring Victor Jory. Do you know what holiday is coming up next Tuesday? It will be St. Valentine's Day, a time that always brings up longing for the thoughtfulness and graciousness of bygone days. And the question is often asked, why can't we have the lovely Valentines today that people used to send when gallant gentlemen drove high-stepping horses to court their ladies fair? Well, this year you can find Valentines just like the ones sent in those thoughtful days of long ago. For the makers of Hallmark cards have created old-fashioned Valentines this year, one of the most beautiful collections you have ever seen. Valentines in three dimensions, with lacy designs, standing out from the rest in that quaint old-fashioned way. Here's one for Mother, with pink roses and blue forget-me-nots, enchantingly beautiful. And here's another for someone very dear, a lacy heart designed with ribbon and flowers. Here's another Valentine of red with heart of pure white silk. Let's read the verse within. A Valentine greeting, and with it there goes a feeling much warmer than anyone knows. A feeling that's heartfelt and specially true, because it's intended especially for you. What charm these Valentines capture. I hope you won't miss the unusual opportunity they offer you this year to remember your loved ones and friends on St. Valentine's Day. Because they're Hallmark Valentines, it's easy to find one for everyone you'll want to remember, to say just what you want to say, the way you want to say it, with the added meaning of that Hallmark on the back, to show you cared enough to send the very best. Now back to James Hilton and the second act of Lincoln and the Baltimore Plot, starring Victor Jory.
The times were dangerous. The threat of storm rumbled low across the land, and history held her breath, waiting for it to break. President Lincoln paced back and forth in his room until the blood-red sun began to rise in the east. Then he went, as he had promised, to raise the flag over Independence Hall. There was a tenseness to the morning, but he refused to acknowledge it. He went inside to speak to the waiting crowd.
I am filled with deep emotion at finding myself standing in this place where were collected together the wisdom, the patriotism, the devotion to principle from which sprang the institutions under which we live. Liberty as a hope to all the world for all future time was the sentiment which guided those who met here. If this country cannot be saved without giving up that principle, I would rather be assassinated on this spot than surrender it.
That was a fine speech, Mr. President.
Thank you, Hill. Hill, I've decided to take Mr. Pinkerton's advice. I will let him arrange for me to go through Baltimore at a different hour.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Mr. President.
It goes against the grain, mind you. No man likes to appear a coward. And as a man, my pride would make me go straight to Baltimore. But as a president, pride is a luxury I cannot afford. I have much to do yet.
Not even the bravest of men would step deliberately into a cage of hungry lions.
Perhaps not. Did Pinkerton tell you any details of his plans about my departure for Washington?
Yes. He said last night that he saw no harm in you going to Harrisburg as long as you felt so strongly about your trip, but that he felt from Harrisburg you must go directly to Washington.
All right. Tell him to go ahead with his plans. I'll do whatever he wants me to do. Of Harrisburg, while I have been proud to see today the finest military array I think that I have ever seen, allow me to say in regard to those men that they give hope of what may be done when war is inevitable. But at the same time, allow me to express the hope that in the shedding of blood, their services may never be needed.
Mary, I don't like to leave you.
I understand, dear. Mr. Pinkerton wants the rest of us to go on to Baltimore as originally planned.
Yes, Hill is waiting for me downstairs now.
Who's going with you?
No one.
Just Hill and you?
Yes, just Hill and me and one car and locomotive and one engineer.
Well, is that safe?
Pinkerton seems to think so. It's being done in the best detective fashion. There will be no lights, no communications. The telegraph linesmen have cut all the wires. No telegrams will be delivered in or out of Harrisburg until Mr. Pinkerton gives the word.
Will this train take you all the way to Washington?
No, just to Philadelphia. Pinkerton is going to meet us in Philadelphia and get us on the New York-Washington train.
Oh, God keep you.
And you. And the boys. Goodbye, my dear. Kind of spooky, isn't it, Hill? like a ghost train cutting its way through the night. Somehow it doesn't seem like the right kind of entrance for a president. A president should... Oh, well.
I know what you mean. The president should be standing in the sunlight. The band should be playing. Well, history keeps changing. And the president has to do what the hour demands of him, just as you are doing. If anything happened to you, it would be the end of the country.
Don't you think it for one minute. This country isn't dependent on any one man. It isn't a leader that makes the country. It's the country that makes the leader. It isn't the man that makes the office of president. It's the office of president that makes the man. I am what the majority of the American people who elected me want me to be. When someone else takes my place, he'll be what the majority want him to be.
Well, a man has to have the makings of a president. And
if a man is a good American, then he has the makings of a president. No, my friend, the loss of a single man can never hurt this nation. It will always put another man in office and go on. The nation may grieve. It may have a sense of loss. But it will go on.
Well, we don't want it to have to go on without you.
You know, I love this land of mine. And I love her voices. The voices of the storms and the winds. The voices of the hammer and the saw. Yes, and of the railroads splitting the prairie with the challenge of civilization. The voices of the people themselves. Arguing and growing by their own arguments. Learning more and more every day what freedom means and liberty. I hope I shall be listening to them for a long time yet. You know, I'm beginning to wonder if I ever will get to Washington. Maybe I'll be the first president that was assassinated before he was inaugurated.
I think Mr. Pinkerton is much too efficient to permit a thing like that to happen.
How sad it must be to love the people and to die at their hands.
Over by the corner.
Well, I'm beginning to feel like a fugitive. Come on.
Ah, here you are, sir. Come with me.
Did you have a pleasant trip? I've had pleasanter, but none quite so interesting.
Here we are. Now, if you, Mr. Lemon, will get in. We're going to the PW&B station, where you'll board a regular passenger train. This berth has been reserved by one of my women detectives. She said it was for her invalid brother, you.
I'm beginning to feel more and more like one.
Well, kindly remain in the berth with the curtains closed until you reach Washington. Above all, don't so much as stick a whisker out of the berth while the train is in Baltimore.
Yes, Mr. Pinkerton.
I shall be close by until you're safely in Washington.
Thank you. Believe me, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for all your efforts in my behalf.
I'll try to get some sleep, sir. I know this has all been a great deal of strain.
Yes, I will.
Well, we're on our way.
Baltimore, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, Mr. Lamont. Baltimore.
I think he's asleep. Well, so far, so good.
One of my men just reported to me that all was well. Depot was perfectly quiet. Baltimore is asleep. Good night, Barbara Fernandino. Sleep deeply. The ships have passed in the night, and the hour and the man have escaped you.
Washington, D.C. Just a moment. I'll get off ahead of you, if you don't mind.
Where's Mother Pinkerton?
Were you asking for me, Mr. President?
Welcome to Washington. I might have known. Now, how did you get down there on the platform ahead of me?
He got off the car ahead. Well, let's get off.
Senator Seward is waiting at Willis to breakfast with you, Mr. President. He didn't want to cause any commotion by appearing on the platform.
How do you know he's waiting at Willard's?
The message was conveyed to me by certain sources.
Mr. Pinkerton, you are amazing.
Mr. Lincoln, may I return the compliment? My association with you shall always be one of my most treasured memories.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Thank you, Mr. President. And now, this is where we say goodbye. The only thing I must do now is restore the telegraph service and send this message by code. Here, read it if you like.
This is to report the safe arrival in Washington of President Abraham Lincoln.
I'm very proud to have been able to give you a safe conduct into history. Mr. Lincoln, goodbye and good luck.
Goodbye, Mr. Pinkerton. I sincerely hope I shall prove to be worth all this trouble. Well, the plot failed, didn't it? The Baltimore plot failed.
Jory and James Hilton will return in a moment. In this hurly-burly age, one of the finest things you can do for a child is to teach him to be thoughtful of other people. It isn't always easy. But Hallmark Valentine Kits for Children offer you a pleasant way to teach your youngsters thoughtfulness. Hallmark Make Your Own Valentine Kits contain red hearts, lacy panels, appealing decorations, everything needed. One kit with the makings of 16 Valentines costs only $1. Other Make Your Own kits are as little as 50 cents. It will thrill your youngsters to send valentines they've made themselves to fond grandparents, to aunts and uncles, and their little friends. And giving such pleasure to others by the work of their own small hands will teach them in a wonderful way. So tomorrow, stop in at the friendly store where you buy Hallmark cards and ask to see Hallmark Make Your Own Valentines. Here again is James Hilton.
Thank you, Victor Jory, for a truly memorable performance in tonight's story.
It was a pleasure to be here, Mr. Hilton, and to play Abraham Lincoln in this exciting adventure story from his life. The fact that it was one of the lesser-known incidents from Lincoln's life made it particularly intriguing to me.
That's about how we feel, Mr. Jory. With Lincoln's birthday just a few days away, it seemed to me to provide a fascinating drama as well as a timely one for Hallmark Playhouse.
Yes, Mr. Hilton, your story selection tonight was as timely as your Hallmark cards. Frankly, I was delighted to hear about those old-fashioned Hallmark Valentines. I've always felt there's a place in our modern lives for thoughtfulness and honest sentiment. But tell me, who's joining you next week on Hallmark Playhouse?
None other than Ethel Barrymore. You can imagine how proud we are to have on our Hallmark Playhouse the leading lady of the American theater. And Miss Barrymore will star in a story written by one of America's best-loved authors, Miss Edna Ferber. It has the rather unusual title, April 25th, as usual. And it's a warm-hearted story of a Middle Western family and their problems as the children grow up. A problem as American as the little Wisconsin town they call their home. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Remember, Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. Victor Jory can be seen currently in the 20th Century Fox production, Caribou Trail. This is Frank Goss saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time when James Hilton returns to present Ethel Barrymore in Edna Ferber's April 25th, as usual. And the week following, the autobiography of Will Rogers, edited by Donald Day, when our star will be Edward Arnold, who will tell you the story with Will Rogers Jr. portraying the part of his illustrious father. And the week after that, John Fante's The Wine of Youth on the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS,
and this is KNBC, Kansas City, Missouri. Stay tuned for Earl's.
Suspense. Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Mr. Burt Lancaster in The Long Wait.
a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear. Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh.
Hey, that's not the way Hurrah for Thanksgiving Day goes.
What do you mean? Why, I wrote it.
No matter. The 1950 version is different. Listen. Over the river and through the woods, the snow is soft and white. Grandpa is happy with his jalopy. His spark plugs are Autolite. Over the river and through the woods, blow high, ye winds, blow low. The car's as snappy as Grandma and Pappy. Because Autolite resistor spark plugs get it going faster in cold temperatures. Give smooth, even spark all along the line of fire. Let your engine idle smoother, run better on leaner gas mixtures. Save gas.
Wait a minute. These last lines don't rhyme.
Why, sure they do. Your car and Autolite resistor spark plugs are always in rhyme. In fact, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with the long wait and with the performance of Burt Lancaster, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
When I stepped off the train at Grand Central, I spotted Len Bush waiting for me. All the heat of my body sucked into my head. I knew that feeling. I felt that way every time I wanted to kill a man. He waved to me. I turned my back and I started up the ramp for the upper level in the street. He caught up to me and he kept pace with his long, shuffling lope.
Don't get me wrong, Dan. I don't want to hound you.
Then why begin, Lieutenant?
Something you said to the warden before you left.
You want
to
repeat on it? I told him I'd be back to the limit.
In this town, we don't even like guys to steal apples off push carts. So when it comes to
you
murder...
You can't touch me. I served my full time. I'm clean. We just got to sit back and wait for it to happen.
Your brother died 2 years ago. Everybody's cooled off. Why don't you let it lay?
I don't cool so easy.
If Richie could come back, he'd say forget it.
Don't tell me what my brother would say.
All right, I won't. I don't know why I butt into other people's affairs anyway. It's not my job to worry about things before they happen.
You'll be the first to know, Lieutenant.
You're a jerk if you put your neck in a noose to rub out a dame like Lois Williams. So long, Dan.
I waited until he was swallowed in the crowd. Then I went across and down Park until I made the Coronet Hotel on 40th Street.
Dan Vettel? Oh, yes. Mr. Thompson reserved a room for you. 423.
The elevator was an old cage that pulled itself upward, like an old man with asthma climbing stairs. I caught the reflection of my face in the panel mirror of the cage. 3 years housekeeping with the state had left a mark. A little paler, maybe. Serene was the word for me. That's the way the reporter put it. The serene countenance of an alabaster saint, showing no trace of the killer rampant under the shell. Only I hadn't killed anyone. Yet. I got out of the elevator and I found 423. Inside, I made for the bathroom. I felt under the washstand. The gun was there. Shorty Thompson had it taped neatly in place, just like he'd promised. I pried it loose. I heard someone at the door. I yanked it open. Lois Williams came in. Not exactly came in. She sort of slithered in along the wall, hung there like a busted balloon. The little rat was as beautiful as ever. The scared look in her eyes made them brighter, greener. She was wearing one of those curved gowns that she used to design for herself and was pointed up neat and tidy. She stared at the gun in my hand in a kind of a glad, hungry way.
Or I'd save you the trouble of coming for me.
I'd have found you. But thanks anyway.
What are you waiting for?
I don't know.
Go ahead. Kill me.
Don't hurry me.
Go ahead. You want me dead and I don't want to live.
You want to die. That's why you came to.
There's one thing, Dan, about Richie. I didn't think he'd kill himself.
You figured he'd enjoy looking at his wife and kid through bars for the next 10 years, huh?
I've lost every friend I had because of that. Nobody will speak to me, have anything to do with me. I can't get a job either. No club will hire me. They're all afraid of me.
What do you expect? They all knew how I felt about my brother. By the way, how is Tim Grady? I'm going to look him up, too.
That's a kick. I ratted on Richie to save Tim, and then he shook me loose. He didn't want anything to do with a squealer, he said.
And you still love that dirty... It took him to make you miserable enough to want to die, huh?
All right, so now you know. No job, no friend, no Tim. I got nothing to live for.
My brother had everything to live for, and you... killed himself.
That saved the postmortem till after you do the job.
This was the dame who caused my brother's death. But she wasn't scared. She was begging for it. Something was wrong. She came closer to me. She looked up at me with that... that haunted thing all over her. desire for an end of life. I thought of her suddenly dead, still looking at me like that. I couldn't do it. It wasn't right. I put my gun back in my pocket. She saw me do it.
Even when I try to get myself killed, I fumble. I'll take care of it myself.
Hey, watch it, you crazy little... Come here.
Oh,
I'm allergic to people jumping out of windows, especially out of a room registered in my name. Come
here. Why? Ida, just stop me.
You always were a high-strung dame. Now go on, go home. Go home and sleep it off like it was a jag.
I don't have a home.
You really don't, huh?
I've got nothing. I told you, I've got nothing.
No. No, it's no fun this way.
Oh, well.
Wait a minute. I'll stake you to a room in the hotel. Here. Here, have a drink. You'll feel better.
Hank.
Lois. Lois, I'd like to help you.
You help me? Why?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. But I know what Richie meant to me. I was with him when he died. I heard the way he called your name.
Dan, listen to me.
Before you became a singer, you were a dress designer.
Oh, what does that prove?
Well, it proves your troubles are over if you want them to be.
The only way my troubles will be over is for you to use that gun.
There's a way that doesn't hurt so much. The nerve doc says there's nothing like starting your own business or cracking a safe to get your mind off trouble.
What do you know about psychiatry?
Nothing. But I know plenty about cracking safes. And I understand business is almost the same thing. Go into business.
I haven't got a dime.
I'll supply the coin. We'll be partners.
Yeah? And what?
The dress business.
Dress business? The boys would laugh you out of town.
Nobody laughs at Dan Verrill. Well, come on. What do you say? Partners?
I haven't designed a dress for
you. Oh, it'll come back to you. Once you're in business, you're sure to make a lot of new friends. Get a new slant on life. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll talk to the old gang into giving you a break again. If things are going smooth, you'll be happy again.
You think so?
I looked at her a minute. And then I put across the clincher. Lois, I'll bet even Tim Grady comes back. I was always baffled by the effect a guy could have on a dame. I watched Hope push some of the unhappiness off her face. Mentioned the guy and the dame's heart changes places with her brain. She hesitated a second.
I'll give it a try.
Good. Now, do you think you can make it past bridges and open manholes, or do you need protection?
I'm all right now. After all, we're partners.
I raised 20 grand and Lois went all out spending. She threw herself into the job with all she had. She had plenty. She was going to open on Madison Avenue. I spent a lot of time with Lois, talking dress shop. She took me to spots to check style. The dog show, the art galleries, the opera. She was beginning to show signs of wanting to live again. A month after we became partners, she told me.
We can open tomorrow, Dan, except that... Well, I...
Let's have it, Lois.
The money's all run out. And, Dan, we have to advertise and get a sales force.
What'll it take?
$5,000? Oh, $3,000.
I'll get it.
Oh, Dan.
She kissed me. And I fought down the chill it sent along my spine. I said, I want you to be happy, Lois. I went over to the Emerald Club on 60th to raise the money. I stayed away from the old spots till now. Lou Henry, who owned the place, glad-handed me when I walked in.
Hey, Dan Farrell. Where you been, boy?
All around and about.
Yeah, you're awful early, Dan. Tables don't open till 10.
I need $5,000, Lou.
$5,000? Without even a hello to soften me up?
I need it, Lou. I figured you'd let me have it. For past favors.
Oh. Sure, Dan. Don't mean no more to me than my right arm.
Thanks. Be seeing you.
Hey, Dan. Buddy of your brother's is out there at the bar. Shorty Thompson.
Oh, thanks again. I'd like to see Shorty.
Another one, bartender.
Hello, Shorty.
Huh? Oh, you, huh? Hey, you're in business, Dan. Something real imaginative, huh?
Yeah, legitimate, too. Ladies' gowns.
Ain't that a riot?
Shorty was drunk. I don't like to talk to drunks. I was going to leave when I saw who the guy was on the other side of Shorty. It was Lieutenant Len Bush. Shorty turned his back on me and spoke to him.
This guy is Richie Farrell's brother, as though you didn't know. A few years ago, the joke was on you, Lieutenant. You put Dan away for sticking up a jewelry store. You didn't really believe Dan Farrell would pull anything as crude as that. It was Richie who'd done it. But Big Brother here took the rap.
Shut up, Shorty.
Used to be sort of a gag with the boys. If Richie got shot, Danny Boy would do the bleeding for him. Everybody knew that Richie was one in a million. Everybody knew that Danny Boy would die for the kid. Yeah, I'm going to let you in on the secret, Bush. Danny Boy's partner is the dame who killed Richie Varro.
You're drunk, Shorty.
Get away from me, you rat.
I turned back to the bar and I kept my temper in my pocket. If Shorty kept talking like that, it wouldn't be healthy for him, and I didn't want to do anything to him. He was Richie's best friend. Two more of Richie's friends walked in while I was downing my drink. Gus Manning and Tommy Algo. I put my glass down and I started to leave.
Just a minute, then.
What's on your mind?
The way I get the news, you and Lois are teamed up.
Yeah?
That's all I want to know, you think.
Hey, hold it, Gus, hold it. Maybe Dan's got it scrambled. Lieutenant, Lois Williams is a dame who pinned the rap on Richie, ain't she?
Any newspaper morgue will give you the answer.
Look, I know she testified against him.
And you know she lied about your brother to save Kim Grady.
I know.
Well?
All right. Lieutenant, the boys and I want to have a little talk.
Okay, Dan, it's your funeral.
We all watched Len put on his hat and walk out. I put my back up against the bar so none of them could get behind me.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Dan, you okay?
Yeah.
What happened?
The boys don't like me just now. They want to keep me from making a girl happy.
Yeah, yeah, the girl responsible for your brother's death.
Yeah, that's right.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Burt Lancaster in The Long Wait, tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
And now it's time for my Thanksgiving fairy tale. Last night, my car called me out to the garage.
Harlow, I don't feel good. I think you ought to do something about it.
Well, open your hood and say ah.
Ah.
Ooh, your spark plugs need replacing. I'll buy you a new set of Autolite resistor spark plugs with the exclusive Autolite 10,000 ohm built-in resistor.
Gosh, Harlow, would you? That's better than turkey on Thanksgiving. Just think how I'll run.
Yes, you'll start faster in cold temperatures with Autolite resistor spark plugs. Give smoother idling and better performance on leaner gas mixtures, which means you'll even save me gas. And the neighbors will be thankful because they know Autolite resistor spark plugs reduce spark plug interference with radio and television reception.
I know all that, so why?
Well, I hustled up a set of Autolite resistor spark plugs, and those Autolite bullseye headlights lit up with joy.
You're a good boss, Harlow.
Now, the moral is, if you want your car to thank you for helping it run better, see your Autolite spark plug dealer and have him replace old, worn-out, narrow-gap spark plugs with a set of the sensational new wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs. Remember, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage our star, Burt Lancaster, with Betty Lou Gerson in The Long Wait, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I sent the $5,000 to Lois so that she could open the doors while I went after business. And I knew where to get it. Nobody spends dough on a dame like a hood when he's loaded. On Thursday, the Third National Bank was held up. Friday morning, I knocked on a door on 8th Avenue.
Who is it?
Me, Dan Varro.
Busy now, Dan. Some other time.
Hello, Tony. Oh, hello, Glenda.
Hello.
What do you want, Dan?
You knocked over the Third National.
What is this, a hijack?
No. Your dame looks like she needs a lot of clothes.
After last night, I figure I'm getting plenty of touches.
What are you still talking about?
I'm in the dress business, Tony. Tell the other boys, too. I want all the dames buying their clothes from Lois Williams.
Sure. What do I care where they buy them?
The next day, I ran into Numbers Johnson. He ran the policy racket on the east side.
I don't have a dame, Dan. You know that.
Yeah, I know. It's about time you gave your wife a break.
Yeah, but buy her clothes now. She'll expect me to every time I hit.
That's the idea. Do you see it my way, or do
I... don't figure it. You, in the dress business.
Well, if I keep having you in the dress business, I'll stay out of the numbers business. Which way do you want to play?
The doll will get some new duds.
Once the ball started rolling, it became a mount. Lois knew all the angles on female frills.
Her clientele was strictly 10th Avenue, but she turned them out on Long Island, and they loved it. One dame tells another, and in no time at all, the shop is jammed with customers. It was a crime the way the dame spent the dough the hoods go to make so much trouble to collect. Lois glowed like a firefly. She was a complete businesswoman. She loved being surrounded with dolls who bounced in and out with business of the shop, business that must have Madame's attention. I asked her during a lull. You happy, Lois?
Yes, Dad. Almost completely. I do miss the old gang, though. Oh, come in.
Pardon me, Miss Williams. There's a Mrs. Beryl outside. She wants to see Mr. Beryl.
Mrs. Oh.
Richie's wife, June. She was supposed to be in the mountains with the kid. That's why I sent her money. I didn't want her to know about this. She was waiting for me on the street. She had a roll of bills in her hand, and she threw it at my feet. The roll bounced against the storefront. I saw the rubber band snap off it and the bills unwrap like a sigh of relief.
You think I'd take your money now?
Now? Well, what do you mean?
You and Lois.
Okay, so it's tainted money, but you got a kid. You need it.
You thought a lot of Richie, didn't you?
As much as you did.
Oh, no, much more. When Richie had pneumonia, I remember how hard you took it. During the crisis, you wouldn't eat or drink or talk. I remember thinking, if Richie dies, Dan will die, too.
Take the money for the kid.
You loved Richie. And now you're sponsoring that woman with his blood.
June, wait.
I'll tell you both.
Nobody was going to keep me from doing what I wanted. Not Lynn Bush following me around, or Shorty Thompson hating my guts, or Richie's wife itching to kill me. I'd given Lois back an urge to live. I swore I was going to make her happy, and I was on first base. She had a going business. Lois's old gang hung out in the village, the Bolo Room. Richie, Lois, and Tim Grady used to pal around with the musicians who played the spot. They used to wait until closing time, and then huddle with the jive artists until morning. When Lois and Tim double-crossed Richie, the other kids cut Lois out of their hair, and Tim Grady left town. That night, I went down to the Bolo Room to get Lois's friends back for her. I walked in just as the last paying customers left. The kids were getting set for a jam session when they spotted me. The place became full of hush. They glared at me, hating me, but not daring to open their mouths. I picked a menu up off a table and I laid it on the bar. I pulled a pencil out of my pocket. I said, I'm giving a party for Lois Williams. You're all invited. Saturday night, Gold Room, Coronet Hotel. Whitey Jones?
Yeah?
I'm putting you down, plus your dame and three guests.
Suppose I can't make it.
And throw away your piano. You'll never play it with broken hands. Phil Bless, you, your dame, and three friends, and your horn. Well?
Okay, yeah, sure, David, sure.
Jerry Barton, Mel Folley.
What?
Joe Ward, Les Seltzer. Your dames and three friends.
Okay.
And make sure that Lois knows that you're all tickled to death to see her. I'll be checking you off as you come in. I'll be seeing you Saturday night. Friday, the day before the party. Hello?
Hello, Dan.
Yeah?
This is Lou Henry, down at the Emerald Club.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want you to think I'm butting into your affairs, Dan, but, well, knowing how you feel about Lois.
Yeah?
Well, June, your brother's wife's been down here talking to Shorty Thompson.
So what?
She talked Shorty into rubbing out Lois.
What?
He's on his way now. Remember who told you, Dan.
I dialed my body caught on the flash. If Shorty touched Lois now, being a buddy of Richie's wouldn't help. The same went for June. Give me Miss Williams.
I'll connect you with her office.
Come on, snap it up, snap it up.
I'm ringing, sir.
Come on, Lois, answer, come on.
Miss Williams' office.
Put Lois on.
She's not in. Who's calling?
It's me, Dan Varro. Where'd she go?
Mr. Varro? You just called, Mr. Varro.
What do you mean, I just called?
Well, someone called, said it was you, and spoke to Miss Williams. I wonder why they do that.
Well, never mind that. What did he say?
Miss Williams always goes to the Museum of Art at this time of day to copy designs. She made an appointment to meet you. I mean, the man who called at the museum. She just left.
I didn't wait for the elevator. I took the stairs three at a time going down. I came out on the street. A cab was idling on the other side of the avenue. I cut through the traffic to get to it. I hopped into the cab, and for $5, the hacky crashed lights all the way. I was at the museum and nothing flat. When I entered the building, it was quiet as a mall. I cursed myself for not asking what room Lois would be in.
Here, you can't run here.
Did you see a girl with drawing papers and crayons? Tall, beautiful, well-stacked?
I see hundreds of them.
Well, where would she go to draw design?
Well, the armor room, maybe. The Egyptian room, or the famous paintings. Second floor.
I had visions of her dead in some corner. I thought of her all twisted in the heap. I hit the Egyptian room in a run and I stopped short. Lois was standing at the other end. She was behind a mummy case. And on the other side of it was Shorty. He had a knife in his hand. They didn't see me. I sneaked up on them and I watched Lois fighting
Shorty,
to move her lips.
Please.
You ain't fit to live.
Please, Shorty.
Lois, run. Run to me.
Dad.
Right, here it is.
I hate to do this, Shorty.
Came this way, Lieutenant. Daddy tried to kill me.
Tough to keep up with you, Dan.
Still with me, eh, Lieutenant?
I always keep an eye on my friends. Who's this laying here? Oh, Shorty Thompson.
You better take him in. He tried to kill Miss Williams.
Yeah, guess I'd better.
Come on, Lois. Oh, by the way, Bush.
Huh?
You better pick up June Varrell, too. She was in on it. In case you don't know who she is, she's my sister-in-law. June and Shorty out of the way for a while, nothing was going to upset things now. The party Saturday night in the Gold Room was a big success. Every time somebody tried to make a break for home, I beat them to the exit and insisted they stay. The place was full of smiles and how-to-dos, and only Lois didn't know they were phony. She was a dream in a green, backless evening gown, held up by a deep breath and an anxious look. She bubbled around, greeting people.
Thanks. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Lois.
Dan, where have you been hiding?
No place. Tell me, Lois, you happy?
Dan...
Just be happy. That's all I ask. Just be happy.
I'm doing my best, Dan.
Is there any guy here you like? Anybody?
There's just one guy for me, Dan. He's not here.
But he is. He's back in town. He's at the Sphinx Hotel.
Tim.
Yeah. Lois, I think I'll drop over and see him now.
Dan, you're not going to do anything?
Don't worry, Lois. I'm going to fix everything. She had her job and friends. Just one thing more. Just Tim Grady to make the picture complete. The Sphinx Hotel was over on 6th Avenue. I walked. I wanted time to cool off. I wanted to do things right.
Yes?
Mr. Grady's room?
One moment, please.
Yeah?
This is Dan Varrell.
Dan?
Yeah, remember?
It's 3 a.m., Dan.
I won't take much of your time.
Won't tomorrow do?
I'm coming up now.
Come in.
Pushed open the door and I went in. I was standing by the bed. He was wearing a monogram black robe over some flashy yellow pajamas. He glad-handed me.
Come in, Dan. Come on in. Have a cigarette?
I took one and I watched him going through hard times trying to light it for me. I let him sweat for a while, and then pulled out my lighter, lit my cigarette, and shoved the lighter under his face so I could light his. I couldn't stand still. He moved around the room like a cat on hot coals. He was a big, good-looking chick, broad shoulders with all the trim, curly hair, dimple on his chin.
I just got back, out on the coast. That's the place to be, Dan. You never saw anything like it. Boy, the things that go on in L.A. Someday...
Light someplace.
Anything you say, Dan.
Lois is a great dame.
She sure is, Dan. She sure is. Anybody says different should get slugged.
Yeah.
Listen, Dan, there never was anything between me and Lois. Anybody says different's a no-good liar. We were just good friends. We hardly ever even went out.
Relax.
Here, you and Lois are partners.
Yeah.
She must be pretty near the happiest girl in town.
Pretty near. You know, when I first saw Lois a few months ago, she was all set to kill us.
Oh, wait a minute, Dan. I tell you,
Sit down, Tim. You make me nervous. Nobody's blaming you for the way she felt. Now, tomorrow I pull out of the partnership, and Lois will be alone again. I don't want her to be alone. It's not good for her.
Anything I can do, you know.
She's in love with you. I'd like to see her get married. A woman with $75,000 business, well, she needs someone to look after her interests. The mention of the 75 grand, his eyes lit up like Broadway after dark. Reading his mind was like looking through a dirty window into a filthy room. It hurt to think a foul ball like Tim Grady could make a girl do anything for him.
Well, Dan...
It's about time she got a proposal for marriage.
Yeah.
Why don't you call her up, Tim?
Yeah. Good idea, Dan.
I mean right now. Stuyvesant, 1541.
Now? Well, sure, if you think... I won't know what to say. It's been so long.
Say you want to marry her.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Lois? Hello, baby. Well, so you knew the old voice.
I closed the door. I didn't know if I'd be able to control myself, if I'd listen to anymore. I got to the dress shop at 10 o'clock the next morning. Lois was floating around like a waft of loveliness. She touched the inkstand on her desk, moved a chair, straightened a picture, wasn't conscious of what she was doing. She talked fast and happy about things that didn't mean a thing. She flung open a window and hugged the inrush of air. She spoke with her back to me.
Oh, Dan, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Isn't life beautiful?
You're happy, huh, Lois?
Tim was waiting when I got here this morning. He proposed. He said you wanted it that way, too. I guess I'm the happiest woman in the world, Dan.
Can I use your phone?
Sure. Call Paris, Bombay, Shanghai. Imagine it. Tim.
Homicide, Lieutenant Bush.
Dan Verrill talking. I'm at Lois's shop. If you get here in 5 minutes, it'll be about right.
Yes, Dan, I'm the happiest woman in the world, and I owe it all to you.
She turned from the window and saw the gun in my hand. Now you're worth killing!
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Burt Lancaster, with Betty Lou Gerson.
Oh, boy, am I happy. Thanks again, Harlow.
That's my car talking, folks.
I ran great today, didn't I? With those new Autolite resistor spark plugs.
Like a charm. Friends, if you want your car to run better, switch to White Gap Autolite resistor spark plugs. The spark plugs that get you off to fast starts in cold temperatures. Made by Autolite, they're one of more than 400 products for cars, trucks, planes, and boats produced in 28 Autolite plants coast to coast. These include complete electrical systems used as original equipment on many makes of America's finest cars. Spark plugs, batteries, generators, coils, distributors, starting motors, bullseye sealed beam headlight units. All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team. Don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and get Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next Thursday for Suspense, James Stewart will be our star. The play is called Mission Completed. And it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The Long Wait is an original play by Fred Freeberger. Burt Lancaster is the star of The Hawk and the Arrow, a Norma F.R. production, soon to be released by Warner Brothers. In the coming weeks, you will hear such stars as Mickey Rooney, Lana Turner, and Eddie Cantor. Don't forget, next Thursday, same time, Autolite will present Suspense, starring James Stewart. Meanwhile, see the very informative story about suspense in the current issue of Quick Magazine.
Spark plugs, Autolite safe full batteries, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
Freedom is everybody's job. Take an active part in national, state, and community affairs to protect your liberties. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the show for this week, but don't forget there are thousands more like it at RelicRadio.com. Horror, strange tales, science fiction, crime, all available for free. If you'd like to donate to Relic Radio and help keep it all free, you can do that through the website as well. Visit donate.relicradio.com to find out more and to see the special downloadable sets that are available. My thanks to those who have donated, and thanks for listening today. Talk to you again next week.